This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. Isn't it bullshit to have to question where your food comes from? At Vital Farms, you can trace your pasture-raised eggs all the way back to the source, the pasture. On the side of each pasture-raised carton of eggs, you'll find the name of the farm where your eggs were laid. And when you look the farm up on their website, you'll get a peek at all the sunshine, fresh air, and open space the hens enjoy. Learn more and find out where to buy them at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
Hey, it's your host, Carter. I wanted to give you a little bit of a warning. Kids who are under the age of 13 might find some parts of our show a little bit scary, so listener discretion is advised. Now, enjoy the show.
Dear Diary, tonight I'm on cloud 9. I finally bought the plane ticket out to El Paso. Jerry will be over the moon when he finally gets to see me in person again. Of course, I'll get to see him as well. And you know, Diary, how much I love a man in uniform. Drat, I do wish my neighbors would quiet down before I go to bed. It's past midnight already. Don't they know it's improper? Pipe down, will you? I'm trying to journal. Was that inside the house?
If someone's there, I'll have you know I'm not afraid to fight back. I'm warning you.
Huh. All that jitterbugging must have really gotten to me. I think it's time for bed.
Welcome to Unsolved Murders, True Crime Stories. I'm Carter Roy.
And I'm Wendy McKenzie. Before we dive into today's mystery, I want you to take a look around yourself. Maybe you're sitting somewhere at home, relaxing, cooking a meal.
Or you're out, driving somewhere.
Or you're at work.
Or hitting the gym.
Now I want you to think back very carefully. Did you remember to lock your front door this morning?
You usually lock up when you leave, don't you?
Of course you did. Why would today be any different?
But what if you forgot? Just today, just this once, would anything happen to you?
Or are you just overthinking things?
Or is there real danger afoot, just outside your doorstep?
These were not the usual sorts of questions that plagued socialite Georgette Bauerdorf in the more unguarded times of 1944.
When people would regularly leave their front doors unlocked and their keys under the welcome mat.
Even in a place like Los Angeles, California, where the wartime film boom meant that that city and its dangers were growing at an alarming rate.
Back then, nobody associated the City of Angels with grisly murder. At least, not yet.
So, Georgette didn't expect that there would be anything amiss when she entered her apartment on that crisp October night.
And it might have cost her her life.
What follows is the true story of the murder of Georgette Bauerdorf.
A case that has never been solved.
If you want to hear about simple, open and shut cases, then this isn't the podcast for you.
But if you want to hear more about the mysterious plot that led to a young woman's death and a murderer walking free, well then stay tuned.
This is episode 19 of Unsolved Murders and episode 1 of the Georgette Bauerdorf case. If you want to review an episode of Unsolved Murders or to hear our investigation into other cases, you can find them all on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or any other podcast directory, as well as on our website, Parcast.com. That's Parcast.com, spelled P-A-R-C-A-S-T.com. A new episode of Unsolved Murders is released every Tuesday. Don't forget to visit our Facebook page, Parcast, to join the conversation.
And now back to our mystery. October 1944. The topic on everyone's mind is World War II finally coming to a close. Although the fight on the Eastern Front wasn't quite over, the U.S. military knew it was only a matter of time until Japan officially surrendered.
So all that was left was cleaning up the European theater.
Could the end be near? Allied troops advance on the Western Front, loosening Hitler's crushing grasp over Europe.
But our victory wasn't yet assured, and GIs were still being shipped overseas every day,
celebrating their last days before active duty in places like the Hollywood Canteen, dancing the night away with beautiful girls.
Hollywood did its best to keep America's spirits high during its third year of participation in a global war.
Movies were the national pastime,
where you could go and forget about your troubles for 2 hours in favor of the glamorous, glittering world of the big screen.
Tickets, 30 cents a piece. And don't forget your popcorn, just 10 cents a bag. Action, comedy, drama. We've got them all. Come and see the best that cinema has to offer.
It was the era of thrilling film noir, glitzy movie musicals, and screwball comedies.
Double Indemnity, Meet Me in St. Louis, and Arsenic and Old Lace were in theaters, and Bing Crosby stole hearts and Academy Awards that year in the musical comedy Going My Way.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule?
Hollywood was the glowing epicenter of escapism,
drawing in people from all walks of life with the allure of fame and everlasting stardom.
And it was this slice of the American dream that brought 20-year-old Georgette Bauerdorf to chase her dreams in West Hollywood.
And she would soon find fame of a sort, although not the kind she was looking for.
Unlike most other young women who came out to make their name in Hollywood, Georgette didn't have too far to fall if the whole acting thing didn't work out.
Right. She came from a wealthy family of Nevada oil barons, and her family had lived a short drive away in the affluent Holmby Hills area of Los Angeles for years.
So money wasn't an issue.
But in the summer of 1944, her father, older sister, and stepmother had decided to move out to New York.
In order to stay in the land of movie stars and chase her dreams, Georgette got an apartment of her own in West Hollywood.
Oh, it's such a lovely place, Daddy. It's got gardens, maid service, a little patio out back. You and Connie can sit out there whenever you come to visit.
I don't know, Princess. You'd be out there all alone.
You didn't mind me being all alone when I took that big train trip across the country.
That was different. You had people on the train looking out for you. We knew exactly where you'd be every step of the way.
Daddy, you know your secretary will be here to check in on me, and so will June. She's my best friend. She'll make sure I'm safe.
June Ziegler worked with Georgette at the Hollywood Canteen.
It was a nightclub for servicemen located just a few blocks from Georgette's apartment.
The ticket for admission was a uniform, and with it, the soldiers could expect to eat and drink all night for free.
As long as they weren't drinking alcohol. The Hollywood Canteen was a dry nightclub,
although the rules could be bent from time to time.
Hey, buddy, get rid of the flask. You know there's no alcohol allowed in the Hollywood Canteen.
Oh, come on, give me a break. I'm shipping out tomorrow morning. Let a guy have some fun, will you?
Don't let the hostess see you with it or they'll throw a fit.
Oh, I see. I'll just keep it right here in my pocket.
And I didn't see a thing. Thank you for your service.
But the canteen's real claim to fame was that it was staffed entirely by celebrities.
That's right. Betty Davis, Marlena Dietrich, Hedy Lamarr, Doris Day, Veronica Lake,
Abbott and Costello, John Wayne, Orson Welles, Bing Crosby, Gene Kelly,
and many, many more all frequented the canteen.
In fact, they were contractually obligated to.
During the war, the studios were concerned that their stars seemed above it all, while ordinary citizens were rationing and doing everything they could to help with the war effort. Their idols were as glamorous as they had ever been.
So, all the studios in town strongly suggested that their stars volunteer their time up close and personal with the soldiers at the canteen.
And to make sure that that volunteer work was photographed from every angle.
Golly, that's Rita Hayworth by the punch bowl. Rita Hayworth is serving the punch.
Well then, go up and talk to her, big guy. You know, she's not a big-time celebrity tonight. She's the one serving us.
I guess I didn't make it through basic for nothing.
Well, hello there, soldier. Would you like a glass of punch?
Hello, Miss Hayworth. Wow, I can't believe you're really here. I didn't realize your hair would be so red.
You can't tell in the pictures, can you?
No, and I've kept a lot of your pictures with me.
You have you?
I mean, not like that.
It's quite all right, I assure you. Punch?
Thank you, Miss Hayworth.
Anytime. And if you want to dance with the girl from your pictures, I'll be back on the dance floor in an hour.
Wow, one of the top ranked in our squadron, and you get tongue-tied around a pretty girl.
Oh, can it? I'll make up for it on the dance floor.
No reason was good enough for even the biggest stars not to attend.
It was a win-win for both the studios, who got to humanize their biggest moneymakers, and for the U.S. military, who got to promise their newest recruits a night with the biggest names in Hollywood.
So, young man, have you had any family serve in the U.S. military before?
Yes, sir. My father fought in the Great War before I was even a twinkle in his eye.
Good man. So you aiming to follow in his footsteps?
Yes, sir. I'd like to do him proud. But if I'm being honest, what really made me want to join was this picture right here.
Is that Hedy Lamarr?
It sure is, sir. Most beautiful woman I've ever seen. And I plan to steal a kiss from her at the Hollywood canteen before I go.
I'm sure she'd be pleased to hear she's got the support of a red-blooded American like you. But you know, she's not the only beautiful woman you'll find at the Hollywood canteen. All the stars will be out to ensure you have the night of your life there.
Miss Lamar's the only one I got eyes for. Now where can I sign?
But despite the huge push for celebrity volunteers, there were only so many recognizable names to go around.
And still, a lot of work to be done to keep the canteen running on a nightly basis.
So volunteer work would be farmed out to studio contractors with little to no name recognition.
And secretaries, film crew hands, and studio executives' wives would often be press-ganged into volunteering.
Do you see her?
Right over there. Is that...
No, you don't. That's not Miss Lamarr. I don't even know who that is.
Was she in that Hitchcock flick, maybe?
No, that's a different brunette.
So where are all the stars? I haven't recognized anyone here tonight.
Beats me. Maybe they look different when you see them face to face.
As long as you had a pretty face, most people wouldn't know the difference.
Georgette Bauerdorf and June Ziegler were two such pretty faces.
Although they likely both had contracts with a major studio in town, neither of them had done any significant work in Hollywood yet.
And as hostesses, June and Georgette's only real job was to talk and dance with the soldiers all night long.
It was a highly respected job for women at the time. Not only did they entertain military men, but they also got to mingle with the numerous celebrities volunteering their time for wartime publicity.
Meaning that most of the canteen's young hostesses were Hollywood hopefuls like Georgette.
Itching to get a glimpse of the celebrity appearance of the week.
Oh, Georgette, look over there. Is that her?
It is. It's really Betty Davis.
You should go up and talk to her.
Oh no, you do it. She looks so lovely in person, I don't know what I'd even say to her.
Don't get starstruck now. This could be your big shot.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll go over there. Wish me luck.
Break a leg, Georgie.
Excuse me, miss. I saw you crossing the dance floor, and I wondered if you'd like to have the next dance with me.
Darn it. Of all the times. I mean, of course. Let's cut a rug.
Even as the new girl, Georgette was popular at the canteen.
She was beautiful, she was flirty, and she flashed her money around.
So then I said, that's not a sailor, that's my sister.
Oh, gee whiz, Miss Georgette, you've got us all in stitches.
Aw, don't tell me a big man like you has never gotten stitched up before.
Well, now that you mention it, there is this one scar I got.
Generous to a fault, Georgette would often pick up hitchhikers in her sister's green Pontiac coupe.
And bring soldiers from the canteen back to her apartment for dinner, even letting them sleep over when they had nowhere else to stay.
In the mood, that's how I got it. In the mood, your ear will spot it. In the mood, oh what a hot hit. Be alive and get the jet, you gotta learn how.
Yeah.
All right, boys. That's about enough fun for one night, don't you think?
Aww.
I know. But if I stay up any longer, I'll turn into a pumpkin. Besides, boys, you've had your dinner, you've had your dancing. What more could you want in a night?
I can think of a thing or two.
But I won't let you all leave empty-handed. I made sandwiches for the road for all of you. I know it's not much, but it's the least I can do while you're serving our country overseas.
You're a real doll, Miss Georgette.
Oh, stop. You'll make me blush.
The canteen had a rule that stated no hostesses were allowed to enter or leave with the soldiers. But Georgette seemed to break that rule regularly, out of the goodness of her heart.
He stayed the whole night at your apartment? Weren't you afraid he would, you know?
Of course not, June. He was a complete gentleman. He just needed a place for the night. Wouldn't you have done the same for a man in uniform?
I don't know, Georgie. You're an awful lot nicer than I would have been.
Despite being fairly well-traveled, Georgette was rarely suspicious of people. She believed the best in everyone.
But not everyone around her necessarily deserved that belief.
Before we get into that, let's talk about something that is the best, our sponsor.
Great idea. And after the break, we'll meet some of the shady characters Georgette interacted with in her final days.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
A new equation for switching on outcomes is here from PwC. It's human-led and tech-powered. It's PwC with Oracle, SAP, Salesforce, and Workday. It's PwC with Microsoft, AWS, and Google. Simplify your systems and amplify your results. Switch on outcomes with PwC and their alliances. Learn more at pwc.com.
Now, let's get back to the Hollywood Canteen.
Although she loved her job at the canteen, Georgette admitted in a letter that even she thought a lot of the servicemen that frequented the place could be jerks.
With her Catholic school upbringing, Georgette was actually fairly conservative.
She preferred conversation and waltzes to fast-paced dance crazes like the jitterbug.
And the night of her death, a serviceman named Cosmo Volpe was a little too persistent in asking her to dance with him.
Ah, come on. Just one more dance? They're playing our song.
Give Georgette a break. She's danced with you plenty tonight.
Didn't you say you wanted to learn the jitterbug? You know what they say, practice makes perfect.
I just said I wanted to learn it, not perfect it. I think my feet'll fall off if we go another round.
Well, sweetheart, you're not gonna get another chance like this. Didn't I tell you I was a professional dancer back in Long Island before the war?
More than once. She told you she's tired. Go and pick on another girl.
Now, miss, I think that's up for her to decide.
June, I appreciate it, but it's just another dance. No need to cause a scene.
You see? Just another dance. She can take it, can't you, Georgette?
You sure you're okay?
I did say I wanted to learn.
That's the spirit. Now let's get back out on that dance floor.
Strangely enough, Georgette may have been right to be wary of the jitterbug.
Earlier that year, a woman named Florida Edwards sued the canteen for, quote, jitterbugging-related injuries.
You heard it here, folks. Jitterbugging is serious business.
But if Cosmo Volpe was trying to woo Georgette with the persistent dancing, then he was out of luck.
The Hollywood canteen limited soldiers to just one dance with each hostess.
Well, they didn't want them getting too attached to one starlet in particular.
But since Georgette wasn't a big celebrity, the rule wasn't very well enforced.
And there was another problem blocking Cosmo's advances.
Right. Georgette was already spoken for.
Her boyfriend, Private Jerome Brown, was stationed out in Texas.
She certainly had a thing for soldiers.
But she wasn't planning on cheating on her boyfriend. For all her appearances, her friends really did think of her as being old-fashioned.
So all that flirting really was just part of her job.
And what's more, she had just bought a plane ticket earlier that day to go and visit Jerome.
Whew, that was a real fast one. I hope I won't be too tired out when Jerry calls tonight.
Jerry? Who's Jerry?
Oh, Jerry's my sweetheart. He's in the Army, too, stationed out at Fort Bliss in Texas.
I actually just bought a plane ticket to surprise him out there.
Why didn't you tell me you were seeing someone?
Because you didn't ask, silly. Besides, what does it matter?
Well, maybe I wouldn't have danced with you if I knew you were seeing someone.
Would have saved my feet a lot of trouble.
Ah, to hell with this.
Jeez, what's his problem?
So, was it jealousy that drove someone to kill Georgette?
Or was it good old-fashioned greed?
Well, after all, Georgette wasn't too secretive about her wealth.
She would treat servicemen at the canteen to meals and gifts pretty regularly.
And any number of people who saw her every Wednesday night at the canteen could have tried to take advantage of her obvious generosity.
Or even a fellow hostess with a grudge against the gregarious socialite.
She did attract a lot of male attention.
And she had a lot more connections out in L.A. than the many other girls who moved out to Hollywood with only a few dollars to their names.
And the same dream of making it big in Tinseltown.
Ugh, the music started up again.
What's wrong? I thought you loved the Andrews sisters.
It's not that. My back's just been killing me. I don't think I could do another foxtrot if I tried.
Well, we can't all sleep in Miss Georgette's big plush bed at night, can we?
Can't we? I just met a newly minted corporal who would beg to differ.
Oh, stop. You know she's as prudish as a nun.
And as rich as a queen. Honestly, what's she doing here? I break my back on a boarding house bed just to make it here while she gets the best of the best everywhere she goes.
Well, I don't know about you, but I hope she chokes on that fluffy down pillow tonight.
It really seemed like Georgette had everything going for her. She had a Hollywood apartment of her very own, a supply of cash from her father, men fawning over her left and right, and a long-distance boyfriend she was planning to visit soon.
What's not to envy?
On the day before her death, she spent the whole day out with Rose Gilbert, her father's secretary, getting her hair done and shopping.
She was planning on receiving a call from Jerome that night and was anxious to get home and wait by the phone.
Well, at least that's one possibility. According to her friends who saw her that night, Georgette may have been anxious for other reasons.
One of her co-workers at the canteen testified that she had seen Georgette wait in her car for 30 minutes before her shift, furiously knitting.
Could it have been a sign she was trying to relieve some stress?
Or just a big fan of knitting?
On top of that, June Ziegler's testimony seemed to suggest that Georgette might not have wanted to go back to her apartment that night.
Hey, June, do you have a moment?
Sure. What's on your mind?
Would you mind terribly if I stopped over at your apartment after work tonight?
Is there something you need at my apartment?
I thought I might stay over. We can have a girls' night in.
Maybe we could do a girls' night on Friday instead. I'm plumb tuckered out already. I'll probably be asleep as soon as my head hits the pillow.
Oh, well, in that case, don't worry about it.
Is that really the only reason you wanted to stay over, Georgie?
Yes, of course. Don't worry about it. We'll try again another time.
Georgette finished up her shift at the Hollywood canteen at 11:30 p.m. and began the short drive home in her Pontiac coupe.
Anxious or no, it seems that she couldn't resist picking up one last hitchhiker.
The hitchhiker, Sergeant Gordon Adland, was heading home for a night at the Hollywood Palladium.
And he may have been the last person to see Georgette alive.
Looking for a ride?
That's right, miss, I am.
Where to?
As close as I can get to Union Station.
I can take you a few miles down Sunset.
That would be much appreciated.
Then hop on in.
Thanks for giving me a ride. Not a lot of girls would pick up a man on the road at this hour.
Let's just say I have a soft spot for a man in uniform. You're an Army sergeant?
Well spotted. You know your insignia.
I work around a lot of soldiers. My boyfriend's in the Army, too. I'm actually waiting on a call from him tonight. He's out in Texas.
Well then, it's good you two are making it work.
Mm-hmm.
Is someone following you?
Sorry?
I didn't mean to pry, but you keep looking in your rear view, like you've got someone on your tail.
No, nothing like that. I must just be preoccupied.
What was Georgette preoccupied with?
And was she really safe, alone in a car with a strange man?
We'll talk about that in a minute, right after we talk about our fabulous sponsor.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Now, back to Georgette Bauerdorf's ride with Sergeant Adland.
Sergeant Adland only pieced together who his driver was when he read about her murder in the paper a day later.
And by then it was too late to warn her of the danger inherent in picking up strange men on the side of the road at night.
Are you sure you've got everything you need, Gordon?
You sound just like Mom. She'd want me to pack the kitchen sink, too.
Sure you don't need some reading material for the train? It's a long way out to Alaska.
It's the Army, brother, not the Hamptons. I'll be fine.
Okay. I'll take the paper back with me then.
Wait a second. Let me take a look at that.
Changed her mind about the reading material?
This is today's LA Times?
I just grabbed it from the newsstand over there. Why? What's wrong?
I recognize this girl.
Oil executive's daughter, found dead in bathtub. You know her?
I never knew her name, but I'll swear on my grave that's the girl who drove me home 2 nights ago.
The one who picked you up by the Palladium? Well, that can't be the same girl, Gordon. She would have had to pick you up,
the very night she died.
Does anyone know about this?
How could they? I only found out just now. I have to go to the police.
When? Your train's about to leave the station. You can't go now.
But what if I have information that could crack the case?
You didn't even know her name until a minute ago.
But I knew there was something off about her. I could just tell. You remember how I said she kept looking in the rear view?
You're gonna miss your train.
But this could be important.
More important than returning to your post in Alaska? This girl's already dead, Gordon. But there's more American lives at stake.
I suppose I could write a letter.
I'll pay for the postage if I have to. Now get on that train.
Sergeant Adland did in fact write a letter to Los Angeles police after he returned to duty in Fairbanks, Alaska.
He recounted his memory of that night, fully expecting to get a call from the LAPD for more information about the final night of Georgette's life.
That call never came.
Adland was never further questioned about his story or considered a suspect.
Even though, by his own admission, his fingerprints should have been found on the passenger side handle of Georgette's Pontiac coupe.
And he was likely the last person to see her alive.
However, eventually even Adland would come to doubt the story he told police.
After years of wondering what he could have done differently to perhaps save Georgette's life, he began to believe he may have read her emotions wrong after all.
In his own words,
"In retrospect, probably the key to our short conversation is that when she got home, if there was a message from her boyfriend in Texas, she would fly there. That's what made me make the connection to her when I saw the Los Angeles paper's story about the horrid affair. When I wrote the letter to the police, I probably said 2 things that misled them. I said she dropped me off on Sunset and then turned right. That is because at that place, the only turn was right. The probable truth is that further along is a left turn off Sunset, which she probably took to get to her apartment. The other possible misinformation I gave in this letter is that she seemed nervous. I assumed that because she kept looking out the rear view window. The reality is that she was doing that while switching lanes. Some drivers don't trust their rear view mirrors."
Although he seemed to have only the best intentions, Adland's initial statement affected the way that the police viewed Georgette's death,
making them consider the possibility of a stalker as Georgette's killer. Perhaps even someone she was trying to throw off her trail the very night of her death.
What police didn't consider was that Adland might not have had the best of intentions.
If he had had something to do with Georgette's death, it would have been a smart move for him to make it seem like she had more on her mind that night than simply giving him a ride.
Because otherwise, a strange hitchhiker alone at night might have set off more than a few alarm bells for investigators looking for means and opportunity.
But if that's the case, why would he go back on his statement later?
Wouldn't he draw more attention to himself?
Well, maybe he felt guilty. Or maybe he just knew that he was already in the clear and that one more statement in this muddled mess of a case wouldn't make any difference.
Or maybe he had nothing to do with the murder at all and was simply a bystander with a spotty memory.
But either way, his anecdotal evidence only seemed to cloud the already impenetrable fog of questions surrounding the last night of the junior hostess's life.
And no amount of guilt would ever bring Georgette back. When Georgette finally got home to her apartment on the night of October 11th, 1944, it was probably going on midnight.
It would have been quiet in Georgette's neighborhood by the time she reached her apartment building.
Maybe there was a light breeze in the night air. Fall usually comes late to Los Angeles.
She shouldn't have had any reason to be nervous as she opened her front door for the last time.
But if her hands had been shaking, it wasn't because of the autumn wind.
Even if she was starting to question the safety of driving home strange men after dark, at least she had finally reached the comfort of her own home.
Bamir Bistashane, again I'll explain. It means you're the fairest in the land. Gee, I can't get that tune out of my head. Wonder if Jerry's heard that one before.
We know that she had a snack of canned string beans and melons, as the autopsy showed she had eaten just before she died. And the can of beans was found empty in her trash can.
A bit late for a meal, but she'd been jitterbugging all night.
Oh, nothing but string beans left. Guess I'll have to go shopping again tomorrow.
Although she told Sergeant Adland she was waiting for a call from Jerome, there's no evidence to suggest that he actually called her that night.
I thought Jerry'd call by now. Wonder who's holding up the phone at Fort Bliss.
So, after waiting a few minutes by the phone, Georgette decided to turn in for the night.
She prepared for bed
and put on a pink two-piece pajama set.
And all the while, there was a killer waiting in her house, biding his time, keeping quiet, and not making his presence known until it was time to strike.
We don't know what finally made the killer decide to come out of his hiding place and attack Georgette.
But we do know that she fought back.
She might have been surprised, but all that dancing made her fairly athletic.
And maybe her soldier boyfriend taught her a thing or two about throwing a punch.
It soon became clear that she was fighting for her life, and Georgette wasn't going down easy.
Get back! Get off of me! Get off of me! I have money! Stop! You're killing me!
If Jerome Brown ever did call her that night, the phone rang to an empty house.
On the morning of October 12th, Georgette's housekeeper found her floating face down in her overflowing bathtub, with a piece of cloth jammed so far down her throat it wasn't found until the initial autopsy.
The bottom half of her pajama set was torn and thrown to the side, and her hands were covered in bruises.
The official cause of death was strangulation.
And whoever killed her appeared to have stolen her car as well.
There were no witnesses.
And no clear suspects.
Could it have been Cosmo Volpe, the jitterbugging soldier?
Gordon Adland, the hitchhiker.
A soldier who got too greedy.
A jealous co-worker.
Or someone with entirely different motives.
Tune into the next episode to find out about the strange discoveries at the scene of the crime.
It looks like there's something between her teeth.
What happened to Georgette's car? And how this case might be linked to another famous Los Angeles murder.
Don't forget to subscribe to Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or any other podcast directory.
Or through our website, parcast.com. That's parcast.com.
A new episode of Unsolved Murders comes out every Tuesday. Let us know what you think and join the conversation on our Parcast Facebook page.
You can tweet us at Parcast Network. That's P-A-R-C-A-S-T Network.
We thank you for listening.
and we hope you'll join us for the next installment.
If you enjoyed this episode, tell your friends. I'm Carter Roy.
And I'm Wendy McKenzie.
We'll see you next time.
If we live till next time.
Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Ron and Max Cutler, sound designed by Ron Shapiro with production assistance from Joel Stein, and written by Jordan Lyric. The amazing cast of voice actors includes, by alphabetical order, Matt Cannon, Mike Capozzi, Kimberly Holland, Michael Malconian, Stephen Pinto, and Vanessa Richardson.